Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 14th. I'm Ray Graff. The region's latest round of winter weather proved once again the importance of a well-functioning vehicle and worthy tires. Here in the studio to help you make sure your car, truck, or SUV is safe and well-maintained this winter is Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls right now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show when Gordon is here, so good to get your call in now. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke and your automotive calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. None other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. If you have a question about your car or truck, maybe the transmission is starting to whine a little bit. In this bad weather, sometimes that'll happen. Or maybe you have some tire issues. Whatever. It's a popular show. I advise you to call early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. And, of course, you can email your questions at voxpop@wamc.org. As with the calls, we take as many emails as we can. Sometimes you get left out of the loop. Always better to go early on that. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Nice to be back.
I understand we have some international listeners today.
Well, you know, we've reached a lot of the states and different locations, but I think we may have some listeners in Germany today.
You are kidding me.
Well, my cousin emailed or texted me this morning, and I said, oh, by the way, if you're around at 2, which would be 6 hours past us,
right,
the radio show's on. So he said, yeah, I'm going to see if I can get the internet on, and I'm going to give him a quick shout-out.
Go ahead.
So, Dirk und Tante Vera, schönen guten Abend. Hoffentlich hat Dirk den Internetverbindung festgemacht und schön, Sie deutsche Zuschauer zu haben.
Well, that's pretty
did you get that, Ray?
I think it was, hey, you know, listen on the internet. We're welcoming you to the show.
See?
And there you go.
Hey, your last name is a German name,
it
right?
It certainly is. I'm sure many of my ancestors and distant relatives are over there right now not listening to this program.
Right.
Boy, the weather has – I was making a joke about the whining of transmissions in the snow.
Yeah.
My van's starting to make a funny whine. The transmission is – I don't know whether it just overtaxed in the snow or
– check the fluid.
I did, but I'm not sure exactly. You know, I was looking at the manual, and it says, pull the dipstick, start the engine, and I said, wait a minute, there's a little issue here.
No, you do check the transmission fluid, engine running.
Really?
Yes, engine running, preferably at operating temperature, in park, some specify neutral. It's basically the same thing. And then you pull the stick out, wipe it clean. Don't even look at that first reading.
Really?
Put it back in for 4, 5, 6 seconds, then pull it out, and that's going to be your level.
So, in other words, after it's warmed up, go home, turn it off, and then do you pull the stick first and then start it?
You can just leave it running.
Really?
You can drive home. You got to be on a level surface,
right,
just like any other fluid check.
Yeah.
So you can go home, leave it running, raise the hood, do that thing with the dipstick and see where it is, and I'll bet you might be a little low.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll definitely give that a shot one of these days here, hopefully maybe even today. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and let's go right to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray in Albany. Ray, you're on.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a third brake light issue. The diodes keep blowing out on it. And after about a year or so, and the price keeps going up and up to get a new one. So my question is, can I install an aftermarket third brake light? And I wanted to put it on the inside of the rear deck, a window. Right now, the third brake light is outside, open to the weather. I have a feeling that might be part of the problem of the diodes blowing out.
Yeah, it's possible. What kind of car is it, Ray?
It's a 2010 DTS Cadillac.
Oh, yeah, that's an expensive array of LEDs yes. back there. So
this is the third one.
Yeah. When the center brake light or the third brake light was mandated back in 86, I believe it was.
Mandated?
Yeah, the third brake light became standard equipment or required equipment on cars built or sent to the U.S. in 1986.
Huh.
So that third brake light was appearing on everything, and there was a company making retrofits. You could put it on older cars if you wanted to, and if you can buy a kit like that, I would imagine you could mount it up high in your back window where they like to see them, and you could wire it, use the same feed, I think, from your other light. And the answer to your question, I believe, is yes. And I don't think it's going to raise any concerns with any Department
inspection.
Of Motor Vehicle yeah. inspection issues. It just has to be there and working. So I think you can do that, Ray. Yeah.
Okay. My second question, which is probably more of the important one, is, who do you know of anyone who can install that? My regular mechanic doesn't want to touch it.
Hmm.
Well, so that's my real issue.
Yeah. I would think about an accessory shop, maybe places that do alarms, stereos, car starters, accessories, because they are accustomed to installing aftermarket products. And they might even have uh-huh. a supplier that makes those. So it's an easy fit. That's what I would try.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, great.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Why, as a design, would they put that outside brake light or the center brake light outside?
Well, if you notice a lot of cars stopping, some it is in the window and others it's incorporated on the back deck somewhere. And if you've ever seen those in the later Cadillacs, there's a ton of LED lighting back there. And that's a big, long strip on some of those cars. And
yeah.
I know they're very expensive.
Hmm.
But I think it's all about the appearance and how they blend in with the rest of the car. And
right.
That, you know.
All right, let's go to line two. And Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Wie geht es Sie?
Oh, es geht sehr gut.
Ich spreche Deutsch ein bisschen. I have a 2005 Subaru Forester. And it was a replacement for a 2005 Outback. The problem I'm experiencing, or at least that I'm trying to get ahead of it, is that even when the car is warm, when I first start the engine up, I hear a slight knocking sound. And I thought it was maybe the valves on the top, tickety-tickety, but it was more of a sound like a crankshaft. Ray will recognize it, a rooster.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this something that it isn't getting worse or anything? It's just that when I first started up, I get a knock, like, and then it will stop.
Yep.
Is it a low oil pressure?
Well,
perhaps.
How many miles are on that vehicle?
130,000.
I mean, that's not severe mileage on a Subaru, any car today. That's not big mileage.
Pretty nice that, yeah.
I guess the question is it what type of a knocking sound is it? Is it from the valve lifters, which can clatter, especially if the car's not driven daily? If it's a knocking sound from low oil pressure, that's more serious.
It's a fairly, it only lasts for a few seconds, and it's a fairly heavy sound, like a crankshaft, or not crankshaft, but a connecting rod bearing,
yeah.
or bearings, because if it were the tappets on the top, it would make, you know, a much lighter sound.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
a little heavier.
Yeah. Well, you know, that boxer engine that's in the Subaru was notorious for noises that people didn't like, especially in the earlier years. And Subaru had a lot of piston slap sounds when the engines were started
but I
cold.
I thought it might be.
Yeah. And no harmful effects. It doesn't reduce the life of the engine, but consumers didn't like the sound. And Subaru did some redesigning, and they would even retrofit back in the day if you were still under warranty with tighter pistons and cylinders. So if you've got that piston slap, it's absolutely nothing to worry about. Just be sure you're keeping up with oil changes and it's at the correct level and all those things. But I don't think you got a big worry there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and our regards to the rooster, all right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Cars, the topic, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And Gordon, two emails and then back to the phones. Let's see. This one's from Joyce. Joyce writes, a stranger noticed that I had a bulge in one of my tires and told me that it is dangerous to drive with it. I did have the tire replaced the next day, 2545R17. The tire that I replaced it with was much more expensive than the one I had, and even though the numbers are the same, the new tire looks a little larger. Could this be? What do I do with one different tire?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because you would think that when the numbers all match, it's exact.
It should be, right?
It's not.
Why?
Because they are using a formula when they do the tire, and it has to do with the width, the ratio, which is the next number, let's say
45R.
That's a ratio of the height versus the width.
Yeah.
And then the number, the 15, 16, 17, 19, that's the rim diameter.
Okay.
So no two tire manufacturers may stand up exactly the same height. So the tire will appear larger and can be larger or smaller. If you have an all-wheel drive car, particularly a Subaru, they don't tolerate much difference in rolling.
Interesting.
Yeah, they have to be within 2/32 tread wear of each other and all this exact brand.
Okay, well, she doesn't say what vehicle she has,
right,
but there could be an issue.
I would be concerned about having a tire that might be the wrong size or larger or smaller than the rest of them.
All right, and then her second part of her question. Of course, the tire company will do nothing unless I can prove that the tire was defective because of the manufacturing process.
Usually a bulge on the sidewall, an external bulge, is from an impact. People don't like to hear that.
So you hit a curb.
It's almost always a pothole, a curb, something in the road that breaks some plies in the side of the tire.
And we're hitting that time where the potholes get to be ridiculous.
Just coming up here today through Henry Johnson Boulevard and up that way, very rough.
You know, and you can't hold it against the city, because it's tough to deal with all these streets, and there's parking issues, people are on the road. But, I mean, there are roads here. It's like driving on the moon.
It's the Northeast. The salt, the winters, the freezing, it's horrendous on roads.
This one's from Bill. Bill writes, I have a 2008 Chevy Trailblazer, a 4.2-liter six-cylinder engine. I'm the original owner, 97,000 miles, generally in very good shape. Question/issue. When the engine is first started on cold, the transmission won't shift, and the fan seems to be engaged. The fan noise is very loud. The engine lacks power. After a couple minutes, the engine quiets down. The tranny shifts normally. Everything seems okay. This past fall, I replaced the water pump, fan clutch, that's viscous only, no electrical sensor, serpentine belt, and idler pulley. I thought replacing the fan clutch would help problem, but it hasn't made a difference. I don't remember this occurring when the truck was newer.
Well, if he thinks it's a slipping issue with the transmission, that could be speeding the engine up faster than normal to get the car or the truck rolling.
Yeah.
And that's what all the worrying is. I would pay close attention to the tachometer and see where the RPMs are when you're driving away. And if it's higher than it usually is, let's say it's instead of 1,500, 2 grand, it's up to 3,500, you may have a transmission issue developing.
Now, so, assuming this is an automatic, you think there'll be a tachometer on it?
Yeah, probably is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Lee in Wallkill. Lee.
Hi. I have a 74 Chevy K10 pickup, automatic transmission, that when I plow with it, and when I occasionally step on the brake, it goes to the floor, and I don't have brakes. It happens just once in a while. Once it happened, and it cleared up after I turned the engine off and turned it right back on. I was wondering if there might be a... if you could tell me what might be going on.
Sure. Well, it's not a computer sensor in a 74.
74, yeah, those were the days,
no.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
No comment about my age.
So I'm assuming you're not pouring brake fluid in this truck all the time. You don't. It doesn't sound like you're leaking or losing brake fluid.
No, I don't think so.
When the pedal comes back up, it's okay and normal again.
It's low. It's always low, but it does stop, and I feel a solid brake.
Yeah.
And if I pump it a little, once in a while, it'll come way up.
Yep. What more than likely is... what you've probably got happening there, which would be very, very likely on a vehicle that age, is a master cylinder that's failing. And what's happening is the piston inside the master cylinder is bypassing internally. That's why your pedal will go to the floor, but you're not leaking any fluid. So I'm thinking master cylinder.
Expensive job?
Not on a truck like that. It's not too bad, no.
Okay.
All right.
Great. I'll give that a try.
Good luck,
Lee.
Thanks for the call. Is he 74? Even a job like that is not that expensive.
No. In fact, you could probably source that part out very inexpensively because those things still live. Those trucks are out there.
Mm. All right. Let's go to Luke. Luke in Albany, you're on.
Hello. How's it going?
Hi.
I just had a question about a Mark V GTI. I had the clock spring replaced, horn went out, and the airbag fault light was on. The same day it was replaced, all of my buttons, the cluster on the steering wheel and dash started working again, but the power steering light came on. I'm just curious if anything could have been set off, like the angle sensor, if it just could be off from the shop not resetting it, or if you have any maybe suggestions as to where to go from here.
Yeah, it probably is the steering angle sensor. And the reset procedure is pretty easy on that, but I do believe it requires a scan tool. I don't think you can do it yourself. But in changing that clock spring, that would be one of the procedures to get the steer head back to zero so it knows that the wheel is in the straight-ahead position.
Okay.
Yeah. What year is the car?
All right. It's 2006.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if that was involved in any of the Takata airbag recalls or not, but that's what you need to have done. I'm pretty sure that'll take care of it.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Luke. And now over to Peter in Western Massachusetts. Peter, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, Gordon. I have an issue with my 2005 Volkswagen Passat with the 1.8-liter turbo. I'm leaking engine coolant, and it's had the head gasket replaced already, and the timing and water pump and all that stuff's been replaced as well. But I'm still leaking coolant, and my mechanic's gone and put it in a pressure test, but hasn't been able to find the leak. And I'm wondering if, maybe with expansion and contraction of heat, that could cause a leak when they're not doing the pressure test.
Any drivability issues or steaming or overheating? That none of those are happening.
No, none of those are happening.
Okay.
It's just a slow coolant leak.
Yep. What we see a lot on that vintage engine is, and it's a Passat, so the engine on that vehicle is longitudinal. In other words, it's in line, correct? It's not a transversely mounted engine. Yeah. So on the back side of that cylinder head, towards the firewall of the car, there are some plastic, there's a plastic housing on the back of the cylinder head, a coolant housing. And they are very prone to leaking, and it leaks in a spot where you won't see it, and you probably don't even smell it because it's not hitting the exhaust or anything. I would, and it's in a very tough spot to get to, but with a mirror and a flashlight, look back there, with the cooling system under pressure, or even just look back there to look for stain marks where it leaked out. I'll bet you that's what it is.
All righty.
Well, that sounds... Thanks, Peter. That sounds like expensive because it's tough to get to.
It's not the worst, but it's just a horrible spot. You got to move a bunch of things out of the way. They just couldn't have left like 2 more inches between the engine and the firewall, or 3 inches, you know?
And why plastic?
So many of these components are now made out of plastic. And a lot of it, they're saying, okay, it's a weight issue, but I think a lot of it is an expense issue. I think it's way cheaper to mold these things out of this thermoplastic and pop them out, you know, by the thousands, and saves, if you save a dollar on each car, it's a lot of money.
I guess.
You know?
I guess. All right. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. Ramon in Montgomery, you're on.
Yes. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 98 Ford Ranger, 4-cylinder, standard. And it's been giving me heating issues. It's funny because the needle stays dead. Thing runs like a charm, never gives me any grief, but I haven't had heat. So needle stays down, cold. As I'm driving at random, it shoots up to normal. Turn on the fan, purges all the heat. Then the needle pins again and stays that way. I took it to my mechanic, who's a multi-generational, thriving local town. I mean, shop, guys. He's good. I have good confidence in my mechanic, always have. So he checked the heater core. It's good. Changed the thermostat, and that didn't fix it. So he explained that sometimes, this is outside of my pay scale, I don't know this, but the impellers on a water pump, something will happen to them, and you don't get the flow you need. So he changed the water pump, and he says the serpent belt is okay, but he himself is not happy. I'm getting heat, but he himself is not happy with the amount of heat, because that's a little cab, and that thing used to heat up in 2 minutes, didn't matter how cold it was out,
right.
And that's not happening. So just wondering if you got any ideas.
Okay.
Why?
Yeah.
Not getting that heat.
So is your temperature gauge now always reading correctly where it should be, in the middle, basically?
I haven't gotten it back yet. He's working on it,
okay.
And this is what he told me. He's done all these things, and they haven't given it because, you know, he says he's still not happy with how much heat is coming out.
Yep. So this is what I have had experienced on Rangers years ago. There's a unit called a blend door actuator. And what
blend door actuator.
Yeah. What that does is it's a little motor that takes your request on the heater dial for warmer or colder temperature, and it signals a motor that opens and shuts a door, which lets more or less heat past the heater core.
Uh-huh.
It directs air past that heater core. And Rangers of that vintage had a tendency for the connection to sever or break where that motor connects to it, and sometimes it would never push the door to full heat, and or the motor is not working right, and it's either stuck at lukewarm or it's not moving that flat. So I would be interested
in
checking that
blend door actuator,
or the flap that it controls, and that's a little uglier because that's a lot more labor to.
But the flap could just be a lubrication issue.
No, the flap can get stuck in those housings and break. Now you got a big problem.
Much thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Bess in Gilderland. Bess, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question about hybrid cars, either both hybrid or just electric. I'd like my next car to be one of these, and I'm wondering about the future of them as far as affordability goes, the yearly cost and the cost of maintaining them month to month, year to year, battery life and all those things. And what is your opinion, Gordon?
Well, it's a very, very interesting question. We are still living in a climate where energy is pretty cheap in the U.S., gas and oil primarily. So the push for fuel-efficient cars is not as strong as it could be. If you go to Europe or Japan, they're living with the equivalent of $7 a gallon gasoline.
Yeah.
So they have no choice but to drive fuel-efficient vehicles, which means lighter, smaller, less powerful. And that's really not happening if you look at the massive size of sport utilities and trucks that are all over the roads. So the demand for electric and hybrids is still quite low, and the numbers of them are pretty low out there. So until fuel prices have, you know, go higher for whatever reason, if it's a taxing issue or a supply issue, you're not going to have that much emphasis on these vehicles. So there's just not a lot of them out there. And tax incentives are an issue too, because it made it easier to buy. But, you know, I don't know if I'm quite answering your question, but.
So you can't really predict the future.
It's very hard to, unless it looks like gasoline is going to creep up and up and up to a ceiling. That's when the push for this stuff's going to come on strong, and all manufacturers will be forced to push into that.
Well, I think more and more auto manufacturers are marketing a model, a version of the hybrid, and it seems that they're trying to make it more user-friendly overall as far as the battery life and how far you can go on a charge. I see more and more charging stations popping up here and there, so there's got to be a climate control aspect to this, too, not just the cost of gas. It's got to be consumer's way of doing his or her part towards this get off fossil fuel campaign.
But you're absolutely right. You are seeing more infrastructure being developed and more development, but how long it's going to take, I don't know.
Do you get a chance to work on all electric vehicles?
I never see any. I mean, there's a few floating around. I've got a guy with a Tesla in town, but those are pretty unique vehicles that I wouldn't see. And we see some Priuses because that's the most common or popular hybrid.
That's a hybrid,
yeah.
I saw an ad a couple of years ago for an all-electric Cadillac that just blew me away. I don't know if it ever went into production, but it...
It hasn't yet.
It looked like quite a sports car.
Well, the electric motor is doesn't require any time to build its peak power.
Yeah.
So they're very torquey, and there is a performance factor available in electric cars. They're not just slowpoke cars. They can be high performance.
And let's go to Karen in Great Barrington. Karen.
Hello?
Hello. All right.
Okay, I have a 2004 Tacoma, which I love. It's only got 90-something thousand miles on it, and I want to keep it forever, so I keep replacing rusty areas. But I'm wondering if I can retrofit it with one of those backup cameras, because I'm the worst driver on the planet.
Ha! Well, that doesn't sound very confidence-inspiring.
No, it's reality, Ray.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, you can. They do make, there's a variety of them available. Some are as simple as clipping or hanging the screen somewhere in the car with you, plugging it into, I think it might plug into a power outlet. But wires have to be run to the back of the vehicle where your camera is mounted. But no, that's not a big deal. You can get backup cameras installed quite easily.
And this would be another thing where you could go to an aftermarket accessory kind of place?
I guarantee you the guys that do the auto starters and the stereos and the alarms definitely are into backup cameras.
Okay, first of all, thank you. Second question, as I said, I'd like to keep this forever because they don't make light trucks anymore. Is there, and I did the Toyota recall for all the rust underneath.
Yep.
Is there anything else I should do? I get an oil change every 3,000. Is there anything else I should do to keep this thing alive forever?
Well, what you should be thinking about, the frame was probably replaced. Was it part of the frame recall? Yeah. So to preserve the fuel lines and the brake lines and all the metal stuff under there, you should get some rust coating applied to the current frame and all the stuff that's connected to it that potentially can rust. And that will make it live as long as you can have it in this climate.
All right, Karen, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Let's take a quick break. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Steve Cropper there. Booker T and the MGs on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And two emails back to the phones then. This one's from Mitchell. And the subject heading is slow leaking tire. Mitchell writes, I've taken the tire to the shop. I bought them since they've had a lifetime warranty. They replaced the valve stem and said they wrapped something internally on it. I've taken it there twice, and they said they can't find the leak even after submerging it. What else could be causing this to leak? I know the answer, but let's have Gordon answer it.
Well, super slow leaks are hair-pulling because if you don't spray the tire with the right stuff, you may not find the leak. But we have a leak detection spray. You mix it up in a spray bottle of water. It's red, so it shows up.
Yeah.
And it foams at the absolute minutest amount of air leakage. So the tire's got to come off the vehicle, and it's got to get completely sprayed down with this stuff. And then you have to watch it and roll it around and stare at it. And sooner or later, a little bubble's going to appear somewhere. My guess, though, on a tiny leak like that is the seal between the rim and the tire.
That's right.
Corrosion issue.
Yes. And you got to, what, file it down, right?
Clean
or sand it off?
You got to get the corrosion removed, and then you coat it with a rust-protective tire goo, and that usually takes care of it.
It's maddening, I tell you. It's maddening. This one's from Christine. Hi, Gordon. Heard you mention Subaru mileage. Any opinion on trade-in time for my Honda Civic? It's a 2013. Runs well. That's from Christine in Waterville Lee.
And the question was mileage?
She said she heard you mention Subaru mileage, and she wants to know if you have any opinion on trade-in time for her Honda Civic, which is a 2013, runs well.
Well, you know, the time and mileage reduces the value of the car.
Yeah.
So the longer she waits, the less valuable it will be. If she wants to do a little bit of forecasting, get on a website like NADA or KBB.
Are those paid websites? I've been on them before, and I...
No.
No?
No. You can get on Kelley Blue Book, which is KBB, or NADA Guides.
Yeah.
And you can look up every car under the sun and get its current value based on their research.
Yeah.
And then you can take that back a few years and see how bad they depreciate. There's no formula to it, but...
Well, I imagine, though, there is a geographical bias.
True.
So in the South, probably her 2013 Civic would be worth more than it would be here.
Yes, some cars are worth more or less in various parts of the country. Like if you had a jacked up 4x4 truck and maybe you went to, I don't know, Louisiana, it may not be as valuable as it is in Minnesota.
No, but what I mean is there is no salt to worry about south of the Mason-Dixon line for the most part.
Yes.
And things like that.
Yeah, that does have a factor.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Matt in Williamstown has been waiting a long time. Matt, you're on.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Good.
Yeah, thanks. I have a question. I got a 2014 Nissan Altima. It's got about 95,000 miles on it. And the past couple of days, when you start it up in the morning, it's very difficult getting acceleration. And there's a squealing noise coming from the engine. And I'm fearful it might be the belt. But then after about 5 minutes, the acceleration comes back. But the tachometer is much higher than it typically is at a certain speed. Mm. So I just wanted to run that by you, go ahead and see what you might think is going on.
So what year is the car again?
2014.
So that's going to be a CVT transmission. Do you know what that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a CVT.
What does that stand for?
Constant variable transmission.
All right.
So it doesn't shift up or down like you feel your vehicle doing now. It doesn't have that.
Doesn't have speeds? No five-speed?
Well, no, it doesn't speed up and hit the next gear and come down, hit the next gear and come down, and so on. It's a infinite variable transmission. It feels like if you've ever ridden a snowmobile or something, it's very fluid.
Yeah.
A lot of trouble with the early versions of those. What could be happening there is that CVT is speeding up too fast, and you're getting those high RPMs without the acceleration you're accustomed to. The fluid maintenance on those is very important and very strict, and I think on that one there, it's probably every 60,000 miles, maybe less. Fluid is extremely important to those transmissions.
Yeah, I have the transmission fluid, you know, replaced. No, I don't remember. It was a while ago, but I had that done once.
Yeah. It's expensive fluid, but I don't know if you're ready for your next fluid change. And I'm not saying that the fluid change may help your problem, but if it's getting close, it would certainly be something to consider doing other than having it checked out. But that it could.
So what do you think would explain, though, that after a while it catches back up?
Well, everything warms up. Yeah, a lot of times you'll have failures or problems in cold that operating temperature covers up, or vice versa. So it could be a temperature issue that's creeping up on the car, bringing out a problem.
All right, Matt, thank you for the call. Let's go over to Jim in Wappinger Falls. Wappinger's Falls. Jim, you're on.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
I have an 01 Honda that I bought recently that had 74,000 miles on it. And this car obviously has sat for long periods of time. It's beautiful. It's pristine. But when I drive it, the transmission is like there's a seems to drop between the gears and the engine revs, and then it finally catches and things like that. And I'm wondering, is this a sign that I need a new transmission? Maybe there's filtration issues in here. Has that ever happened to anybody you know?
Yep.
Help me here.
That vintage Accord. The transmissions that Honda developed their own automatic transmission. They called it a Honda-matic.
Okay.
And it's not like the automatics that we're accustomed to in most vehicles or U.S. cars. And there's some gears and mechanical components in there, and then there's shifting mechanisms that shift it. And that buzz up between gears was pretty common on that vintage Accord. Unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it. A fluid change probably will not make any difference, although the Honda-matics were a drain and refill. They had intervals of changing the fluid. I have had people live with that buzz-up for a long, long time. It may not ever change. So I don't know if you need to fix it. Depends how severe it is. But it may get really bad and cause you to have to fix the transmission. But I think that's what's happening because I've experienced it on those cars.
It may stay the same?
It may not get much worse for quite some time. But that was the Honda-matic Honda shiftitis problem.
Okay.
I was just nervous if I had to do more maintenance than what I was doing on it. So thank you for that very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. Over to Rachel in Fishkill. Hello, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2015 Subaru Impreza, and the little grail underneath the bumper came loose, and I took it off because it was really literally falling, hanging on something. And it's in the back of my car, and I keep forgetting to go to a body shop or something and see about getting it put on. And I just wonder if there's any problem with keeping it off or if I should get that back on.
So I kind of missed the early part. It's under
a grill of some kind.
Okay, a little grill under the front bumper.
That little grill. It's very narrow.
Is it just a plastic
bumper? Yeah.
Like a black plastic? Yeah. Not critical. Not critical that be put in there.
Why is it there?
It's letting air in. It's letting air come in to cool things. The radiator, the AC condenser.
Gotcha.
And instead of just leaving, a slot or a hole there, it's probably more ornamental than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point when you bring the car in for a maintenance, see if it's not broken, maybe they can pop it back in there and you got the original look back, but I don't think you're harming anything by not having it there.
Okay. Super. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. Now let's go to John in Delmar. John, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2012 GMC Canyon at 150,000 miles on it, 5-cylinder. I think it's an ignition. I'm not sure. Every once in a while, I'll turn the key, nothing. But I do have the accessory power, windows, radio, windshield wipers. I let the vehicle, if I turn it off, let it sit. About 10 minutes, it starts up, no problem. I have had the ignition replaced, and I was wondering if it could be something else.
So when you experience that situation, it won't crank, start, or even light up anything?
It'll light up the idiot lights and the radio works and windows I can wind up and down. The power comes on.
Yes, but it won't engage the starter.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So that's an easy test for a shop. What they would need to do is, first of all, be able to reproduce that.
Right.
But when that's occurring, get a test light on the solenoid wire at the starter. And when another person is in the vehicle turning the key to the crank position, if that test lamp lights up as soon as he turns that switch, you got a starter problem or a connection at the starter. If that test light does not light up, you got a signaling problem, and then you've got other issues.
And that's worse.
Theft, possibly the anti-theft system is falsely coming on, or you have an ignition switch problem.
Oh.
And on some vehicles, they still have a relay, an ignition relay. So that test light to the wire on the starter is the quickest, nicest test because it rules out a bunch of stuff.
But if the relay went, it would be gone. It wouldn't come back, right?
Relays can fail intermittently. They don't have to fail flat out.
But now, this has been going on now because I had it and then the ignition was replaced. It's been 6 months now.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't had any issues, you know, with the starter when it's, you know, when it, 95% of the time.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
So this has happened since you have replaced the ignition?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It would be nice to go right to the starter because that tests everything from the key switch to the starter. And if you get a solid light every single time, you just confirmed a whole bunch of testing. And then you may have a starter problem or a connection to the starter problem.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Now, again, as with the relay, will the starter have those issues where it just won't even click?
Yeah, starters can have, they used to call it a flat spot, which really wasn't a flat spot. But the starter can start to develop a open circuit problem where you turn the key to crank it and you hear zero sound. No clicking, no cranking, no buzzing.
And then it'll work.
And then you could hop in the thing 2 minutes later and boom, it's running.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All
we
right.
have a lot of intermittent starter issues.
Let's go to Kathy in Saratoga. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2008 Saab 9.3, and I recently had some new tires put on the car, and I was told that they couldn't align it because the parts were frozen and they didn't want to break the parts. So the question is, should I have somebody try to loosen those parts? I guess that maybe they're rusted on. The car is not pulling at all. It seems to be driving fine. So I didn't know whether it would be advisable to just drive it as is.
Right. Did your last tires wear fairly evenly?
I believe so.
Yeah. If they did, chances are your alignment is okay. And to do a realignment, I think probably what they're saying is the tie rod ends are so rusty that they can't break them loose to make the adjustments if they have to. So replacing them is a little bit expensive. It's not the end of the world, but
it's needed.
Yeah. As long as the car is safe and there's no issues with front end or steering parts, you could. Did they even attempt to put it on their machine, or they said these parts are too rusty to even touch?
Well, they did put it on their machine, and it seems like it's off just a little bit.
Yeah, that was my question.
If that's what you're asking.
Yeah, if they did set it up and measure it and say, yeah, your front end is out of alignment, but not terribly, you could just keep driving it. And at that point, you want to really watch your tire wear, front ones in particular, and maybe rotate those tires every 6,000 to 8,000 miles to keep them even.
Hmm.
Okay.
That's what I'd do.
I did. One mechanic did say that they would be able to unstick them, mm-hmm. but I just didn't know whether that would be more expensive than just buying new tires.
Probably not.
Tires are pretty expensive.
Yeah, they are today. Yeah. And if they can free those up and make them turn and get your adjustments, then you're realigned and you're good again.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot. Let's go over to Gunnar in Feuerbach. Gunnar, you're on.
Hey, I have a question about a 1990 F-150 with the Ford 300 inline six.
Okay.
I have a coolant leak somewhere, and I'm not losing a lot, and I did a pressure test, and I can't track down the leak at all. And the odd thing that I'll notice is if I leave the truck for a few days parked, I'll come out randomly one morning, and I'll see a little pool of coolant under it, and that's the only time kind of back towards the rear of the engine, but I can't actually trace where it's coming from. And I was just wondering if you have any ideas on what could be causing that.
If you were to follow that, where that stain is under the vehicle, if you go straight up, do you see it hanging or dripping off of anything at that point? Have you ever been able to slide under there and look?
Yeah, just kind of it's in the rear end of the block.
Yep.
I can't seem to trace it anywhere in particular.
Well, if you follow that up around the bell housing, if you see it coming off of the back of the head somewhere, it's not very likely. It could be a cylinder head gasket. It could be a what are called frost plugs or expansion plugs that go into the cylinder block after they produce it.
Okay.
And there are some freeze plugs between the engine and transmission that you can't ever see, and one could be seeping.
Okay.
So this is what I would try. As long as your coolant is nice and clean, not horribly dirty and rusty.
It's good.
Go for a very mild cooling system sealer. Used to call it Stop Leak. They may still, but Holtz.
Okay.
Holtz makes a product, and actually it's sold through Subaru dealers, that's very effective and doesn't plug up anything. And you could buy that at any Subaru dealer or auto parts stores.
What's the name of the stuff?
Well, Holtz is the company that makes it,
okay.
But Subaru has it by the cases.
Looking for that stuff the other day,
yeah.
And I couldn't see any Subaru brand.
Well, you got to go to the dealer.
Ah, okay.
And on a 306, that's a pretty big cooling system. You could put a couple of bottles of it in there, and that may just take care of your problem.
Okay, that's great.
All right, thanks a lot. We only have 20 seconds here. Chris in Sandgate, Vermont. Chris, I'm sorry, you only have about 10 seconds, so go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you, guys. I have a 1988 Mercedes-Benz 300 SE, and occasionally will not upshift. I turn off the car to kind of reboot it, and it works fine.
Okay, that's about all we have.
Well, it's possible that it is a transmission module error or sensing problem, and if you shut it off and restart it and everything is fine, I would, the next time it fails to shift, don't unhook the battery, but get it scanned at either a dealer or shop that has European software. See if there's any codes in the transmission module.
Well, that's where we will have to leave it. Gordon Fricke, thank you so much for being here. Support comes from Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 49 years, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Mother Earth Storehouse, serving the Hudson Valley with a variety of seasonal items and organic and all-natural foods, including a smoothie bar, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, ColbyService.com. And Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, presenting Entozake's Shange's for Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough, February 28th through March 10th, newpaltz.edu. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for stopping by today. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Dina Salzman took the calls. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. Right now, stand by for news.